It's Nightlife.
Yeah, less than a month to go before December 25. You have done your Christmas shopping yet? No, I haven't either. Well, what are you getting your pet for Christmas? Maybe some tasty biscuits for your dog, new wheel for the hamster, a little soft bedding for the cat. We're talking tonight about some handy suggestions on what makes a good Christmas present for that special creature in our lives. And here to guide us through summer and the festive season, animal behaviourist extraordinaire and veterinarian, Dr. Kirsty Saxall. Good to see you, Kirsty.
Good to be here too, Tony.
And thanks for conducting the choir. Well done.
I thought they did very well.
They did very, very well. We're proud of that. Here, little treat. Mm. Now, what suggestions do you have for that little friend of the family that we have? And it's obviously a difficult time of year because a lot of people are going on holidays.
So if we think about, let's talk about going on holidays first and then look at gift ideas.
Yeah,
going on holidays is a big thing, and generally most boarding kennels, most establishments are already booked out. So if you're thinking of a last minute place to leave your pet over that Christmas school holidays, good luck. That's exactly right. Mm. This is a cancellation, you're very unlikely to get in. And a lot of these places, people book them a year in advance for these sort of peak holiday times.
As they say, book early and often.
Yep, absolutely. And then, you know, there's the boarding kennels, then there's people who'll come to your house, there's people who'll actually move in, look after your pets, water your plants, do all that.
Yeah, that's what we do.
And then certainly there's people who just come in and, you know, walk the dog twice a day, feed the cat, and don't live in your house. So there's all sorts of different variations. But, you know, it's November, it'll be December very, very quickly, and I think now you've got to be starting to plan for 2014 if you haven't already made some plans at this stage of the game.
Absolutely. Now, the good news is that I think hotels and motels are getting a little more pet-friendly these days. So if you're thinking of taking Bubs with you on the trip, it's going to be possible in some cases.
Yeah, and that's really nice to see because we're really lagging behind the rest of the world. I remember when I lived in the States, you know, in the 1990s, we went to a hotel and people were there with their pets, and I went to a pet wedding in New Zealand in a very flash hotel quite a few years ago too, which is really not the pets weren't getting married, the owners were getting married, but the pets were at the wedding, I should explain that. But yeah, it's nice to see a lot of the hotels, motels, a lot of places are now allowing people to bring their own pets, and I think that's really important because, you know, we do see pets as part of the family, and it'd be like leaving the kids outside in the kennel.
Obviously, if they're moving away from their normal environment, it's good to have a couple of familiar things around so they don't feel totally disoriented.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a couple of things. Like microchipping is enforceable by law in a lot of states. So you have to have your animal microchip. But a lot of people forget to update their microchip details when they actually move house, for instance. So make sure your microchip details are up to date. So should the worst happen and your pet escape, then if they get taken to a pound or a vet or a shelter, then someone can scan it and trace it back to you, because there's nothing worse than being on holidays and losing your pet.
Kirsty, I have to ask, is it the same chip used Australia-wide?
There's very many different variations on the chip, but
why don't they make it national?
Well, they're all readable by the scanners, so it doesn't matter what it is. They're all readable by the scanners. It's just the microchip registries vary from state to state and jurisdiction to jurisdiction. To me, it's a bit like in the old days, you know, when you were travelling from New South Wales to Victoria, you had to get off in Albury because the rail... We live in a federation, and that's part of the issue, that each state and territory has their own rules and regulations. But the scanners can read all the microchips. That's not the issue.
You'd think with pet registration, it wouldn't be that hard to get it on a national basis so everybody was pointing in the one direction.
It wouldn't be that hard. One would assume that would be a relatively easy thing to do. But we can only just keep knocking at the door and keep telling people this is a really smart move to do.
We mentioned a couple of things that could be handy, like the new wheel for the hamster and that sort of thing. But, I mean, what suggestions as far as gifts for the pet in your life?
It depends on the pet. If we think about toys for animals, the most important thing is to find a toy that your animal actually likes. A lot of toys are designed for the attractiveness, for their appeal to humans, and the dog or the cat or the hamster looks at it and goes, yeah, well, if you want it, nothing to do with me. But so think about what your dog or cat or pet likes to do, whether they like to chase or whatever, and then pick something that you can actually either you get them to use when you're not there, because those interactive toys, those feeding food dispensers that the animals can use when you're not there can be really good. But there's also toys that are interactive that you can actually play with the animal there. And for me, it's always about something the animal likes. It's got to be safe, so that if they are left alone, that they are not going to destroy it, hurt themselves, you know, chip their teeth or cut their mouth or swallow it, and there's going to be an issue with that. And something that, you know, is easily cleanable too, because we kind of forget that, you know, when they're chewing things or they're food dispensing stuff,
it gets messy.
You've got to be able to clean it safely.
I've got to say, I thought I'll be very clever and I'll get a new scratching post. This was a couple of years ago, and that didn't work. I can assure you. Took one look at it and so I said, oh, no thanks. Where's the old one?
Right. And that's because when cats scratch, what they're doing is leaving, I guess, pheromones or chemical messages with their claws on that scratching post. And so it's a bit like someone deleting all your inbox, you know, your details. And it's like, my God, where's all my messages gone? I lose it. And it's very distressing. The other thing is a lot of the scratching posts aren't the material the cats actually want to scratch. For me, I always say owners, the awfuler the scratching post looks like, if it's really shredded and torn, the cat's probably really having a good time with it. And it's very hard to convince them that they might like to use a new one. It might fit better in with your decor, but it doesn't necessarily fit in with their
plans. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's currently sitting under the stairs, the new one, when untouched by paws. Yeah, these things happen. Now, if you don't want to spend up big, you know, what's, as I said, you know, maybe a favourite biscuit or, you know, other little bit of treat.
You don't have to
spend
up. Got to
be a little bit careful because, you know, they certainly don't eat what we eat. Although I was over at my sister's place on Thursday and we were just having an afternoon tea and some carrot cake fell on the floor and I thought, Zach. And Zach had eaten it already, so he obviously likes carrot cake.
Yeah, look, a lot of dogs and cats, for that matter, sometimes eat things that we don't think that they should eat. A little tiny bit of carrot cake probably is not going to be an issue. But the big problem at Christmas time is we have chocolates, we eat really fatty foods, and there's, you know, the roasts and stuff. And that's where we kind of get into problems with them having issues. But as far as...
So dogs and chocolate are definite no-no.
Yeah, and again, it's not good for chocolate, no good for fat, all that sort of stuff, because a little bit's probably not going to be an issue. But, you know, it's toxic. So there's no doubt about that. And we do have animals that get pancreatitis and all sorts of issues if they have fatty meals. But as far as presents go, I mean, often you find, you know, the scrunched up paper balls, a bit like kids, you buy them a really fancy present and they really
packages.
Like the paper package instead.
Yeah.
And you'll find a lot of dogs and cats will quite happily do that. And if you've got kids, you can actually make a lot of toys out of paper and cardboard, be very inventive, not spend much money, and have something that the kids like to do. They've made it for the pet, and in fact, it's something that the pets really enjoy too.
Yeah. Well, New Year's Eve means parties, loud music, horns blasting, that sort of thing, fireworks in some locations on the radar. What precautions can you take against the noise? Because as we've often expressed on the show, their hearing is so much better than ours.
Absolutely. And there are a large percentage of dogs and cats that are really frightened of loud noises, and thunderstorms, fireworks are right high on their list. And they get very, very distressed. People tend to notice the dog because the dog starts pacing or drooling or, you know, really becomes very upset, wants to hide or get on top of you. Cats often just disappear and people assume that the cat isn't worried about those noises. But in fact, I think a lot of cats go untreated and become very, very distressed during that time. So if you know your animal doesn't like loud noises, best thing to do is go and see a vet and get an anti-anxiety medication or a pheromone spray or collar for them. Not a sedative. That's really, really important because we don't want to sedate them. The sedatives actually knock them out so they can't move, but they're still just as distressed inside. So we want an anti-anxiety medication and a pheromone. Comes in a collar, diffuser spray. Perfect for most dogs and cats.
You've been saying that, you know, you've seen some dogs that are just so distressed at that time that they actually do themselves physical damage.
Absolutely. I've seen dogs go through plate glass windows. I've seen them jump out of second story balconies. I've seen them really rip out their teeth, their nails, and in their frantic, and I guess it's like having a real panic attack. They're frantic to escape the noise, and it is horrible for the pet and it's horrible for the owner. And if we can do something in advance, and we can these days, then that's the time to do it.
Summer thunderstorms can be just as scary, I think, as fireworks for the pets. If you're battening down the hatches as the storm approaches, how best to deal with the dog and or cat. I often find that they find their own, you know, happy hiding place, you know, normally under towels or under, you know, somewhere that they know it's very dark.
And they feel safer. Certainly we see and hear stories all the time of dogs that get into bathtubs or into shower recesses. It seems to be a favourite place for a lot of animals. Some animals want to get under the table. Some of them want to sit on your lap. My dog, when she gets really frightened, there's a corner of the couch she wants to be in, and that's really important that she's
able to go with the flow.
Go with the flow. And again, there's anti-anxiety medication, there's pheromone collars, there's all sorts of different products that are kind of like, you know, shirts that you can put on the dogs and make them feel comfortable, and for cats as well. So there's a lot of stuff out there that doesn't take a lot of intervention, but makes them feel much, much better.
Also, you can tell that a storm's approaching because quite often they start to go a little bit loopy well before you can actually see any thunder or lightning.
Absolutely. I often think that we should lend a few of these dogs out to the Bureau of Meteorology, and I think we'd be early warning system. They definitely indicate things well and truly before we're in aware of it. It's not surprising. Sometimes the weather looks really fine, you know, it's a blue sky, and you can see your dog starting to pace and look really distressed and agitated, and sure enough, within half an hour there's usually a thunderstorm.
I guess the other big problem is the temperatures are starting to get up 35 plus in a lot of centres. And we're, you know, about to see the first day of summer, although there have been some warm days already. One of the basics, water and plenty of it.
Water,
on hot days.
Yeah, water, plenty of it. Shade is really, really important because and we need to be able to get into some sort of cover from the sun. But the water bowls have to be something that they can't tip over, because sometimes you'll have animals that'll play in the water bowl or they'll knock them over, and then that's not any use to it. So they has to be fixed. There has to be large enough. So, you know, a big bucket of water if you've got a few dogs or large dogs. What I find really useful is to get those old ice cream containers, couple of lead ice cream containers, put water in them, freeze them, and then empty the big ice block, because they're pretty big, solid ice block, 2 litre ice blocks into those, and that'll keep them cool as well, keep the water at a nice temperature for them as the day heats up as well.
Cats are one of those really strange beasts. They don't have a good thermometer, I don't think.
Cats, I think it's the same with dogs too, but certainly cats are known in winter to go and sit right on top of the heater, and they don't have a good way of telling the temperature, which is why we sometimes get animals that literally cook themselves. And it always, you know, amazes me when you see animals with fur coats and they go out and sunbake, and that's, you know, they seem to do that, like the sun, and then they get really, really hot. The big worries we have with white animals, like white cats or white dogs, sunburn, they get melanomas just like we do. So best to keep them inside when it's really, really hot temperatures. Yeah.
What about haircuts for dogs and cats? Is with summer a minute away, a trim might be worthwhile?
Yep, for those really long-haired dogs and cats, it's a really good idea. For a number of reasons, we have keep them cooler. That certainly helps. But secondly, this time of year, we have fleas, we have ticks in some areas, and certainly down the east coast of Australia, makes them easier to find, makes it easier for the cat. And it stops all those knots and all that other prickly stuff that tends to end up in their fur when you take them out.
Just going back a little bit on this one, but worth a mention, one of the SMS says, don't forget onions. As much as my hounds enjoy spag bol, it is not good for them.
Absolutely true. There's a lot of things that we eat that is not good, and onions is another good one that we shouldn't be feeding animals.
Yeah. So that's all animals. Onions aren't too good?
Yeah, especially, well, the average domestic cat ones. Isn't going to go and eat the onion. Yeah. Well, there probably is a cat out there. Somebody's bound to ring up and say their cat goes for it, but generally not. Cats are much more finicky about what they put in their mouth. But you
dogs
know, in a
not
spag
so
bowl,
discriminating.
Well, not so. And in a spag bowl with all the other meaty flavours, they might well get into it.
Yep. It's around this time ticks are a bit of an issue as well. What do you recommend as the most effective methods of tick protection, detection, removal, that sort of stuff?
There's a number of different products on the market, and your vet will be able to tell you which one's the best in your area. They need to be, they're different spot-on kind of preparations, and there's tick collars and things, and it depends on the local area which ones tend to be the most effective. But they have to be applied regularly, every 2 weeks for the spot-on. The collar has to be replaced. I think that if you live in an area where there's the paralysis tick, you really need to go over your dog or cat every day, from, you know, from the nose to the tip of its tail.
It's one of those things difficult sometimes when you've got a new pet, because you don't fully know about the area that you're living in, and sometimes you can misread a situation.
Yeah, and certainly ticks can be very, in the paralysis ticks, initially the dog or cat might just vomit, they might have, their bark or meow might sound different, then they go wobbly on their pins. But what, any of those signs, definitely go to the vet. But most of the vets who have practices in the tick areas, they'll have ticks to show you what they look like. They'll have the tick removal equipment, and they'll be able to advise you. Yeah. And when I was in the practice the other day, and we have a jar of ticks on the front desk, and people were actually, well, because people don't know, and they said, oh, is that what they look like? Yeah. And they can be very, very tiny, to the size of a beetle. And if you've never seen one, you know, people are quite surprised at what the actual things look like. So, yeah, go and see your vet. Have a look at what they look like, you know, I have seen clients think that the nipples are ticks. So best to go and have them checked out if you're not sure.
You say those are very chewy mints. No. We also have to remind people, and I'm sorry, this does become a little bit of a boring thing, but it is a very important thing to remind people. If you're thinking about having a pet, a new pet, and giving it as a gift, make sure that the person involved actually wants it.
Absolutely. I think that's the thing, that just because we might want the pet or think that the person might want the pet doesn't mean that they will, because a pet is a commitment for a long, long time. Whether it's a dog or a cat, or certainly some of these parrots, they can live up to 80 years. I mean, you know, so it might sound like a really good idea, but somebody's grandchildren are going to get them. So really important that somebody wants the pet, is prepared to put in the time, the commitment, and realise that, you know, there is really no animal that doesn't require any care at all, whether it's a rabbit or it's a hamster, guinea pig, whatever.
Axolotl,
they still need some sort of care. But yes, certainly with dogs and cats, it's really important that they want it. They know how much money it's going to cost them to look after it, and they are prepared to put in the time and money, time and energy, I guess, commitment of house training puppies and all that sort of stuff. It takes a lot of time, but a lot of pleasure.
Kirsty, what about the age of kids where they are okay to look after a pet? A lot of people like to have their children have a pet, but at what age is it responsible to give them one?
Well, I guess that depends on the child, but most parents will tell you that they might give the job of feeding the dog to the kids, but under about 8 or 10.
And in the second week.
Yeah, it's like that novelty wears off and they don't do it. And really it ends up in one of the parents' duties, I guess, to do that. So, yes, it's good. It's fantastic to have them around. And that's not of all kids, but generally the novelty wears off fairly quickly. And especially when they go back to school. It's fine in the holidays when they've got time to run around, but when they're actually back at school, it's hard to do it. So mum and dad have to be prepared to be the ones that look after it.
And you have to make sure that the child is, old enough to be able to be around a pet as well, I guess.
Yeah, generally paediatricians and veterinarians recommend that no child under 9 or 10 should be left alone with any dog. Yeah. And not because the kid's awful or the dog's awful, it's just that it doesn't take very long for accidents to happen. If we talk about pets like rabbits, they are very easily frightened, and if the child picks them up, they can break their back, they can have all sorts of injuries. So we've got to remember that regardless of what pet we have, it's the child is old enough to actually deal with the pet. Sometimes it's better not to have pets that it sounds like really good, we'll have a rabbit in the backyard, but they actually don't do well with young kids at all, unless they're one of the bigger rabbits. And the kids have, don't try and pick them up, I guess that's the bottom line.
Yeah. Another SMS says, eucalyptus is toxic to dogs and cats, inhaling it via vaporizers people use for colds and flu can cause a fair bit of distress. Not many people realise it, and the listener found that out the hard way with his dog.
There's a lot of things. I mean, tea tree oil is a neurotoxin as well.
I'm not surprised. We had a sort of like a stain at home that Madame recommended Madame Lush. So said, oh, yes, use tea tree oil. And she was a little bit loose in, you know, how much to use. You could smell it for about 3 weeks after the event, and everyone was looking a little askance when you used it. So tea tree and eucalyptus,
Just be careful. Well, a lot of those things are a little bit, you know, the tincture of anything, but I've had, unfortunately, clients of mine lose their pets because they thought, oh, I'll put some tea tree oil on it, and instead of just putting a little bit area, it was on a large area, it was absorbed by the skin, and there's no antidote for it. So, you know, in shampoos and things where they're already diluted, but the real stuff, be really careful. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that we might think are natural, but they're actually toxic, like arsenic.
Eucalyptus tea tree for the pets.
Yeah, unless they're specially designed pet products, because then that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. Kirsty Sexel's with us tonight, our animal behaviourist and veterinarian. I'm just wondering whether you've got some issues to raise tonight. Maybe on something you've talked about already, you might have an issue that you'd like to add or subtract to what we've said. Perhaps there's some issues as far as behaviour is concerned at the moment that you're struggling with. Maybe there's some health issues that you're, you know, the parrot's looking a bit peaky. Join us.
It's Nightlife.
I think we might go to calls at this stage. Andrew, you want a quick word about presents for dogs?
Yes, Tony. Hi, Tony. Hi, Kirsty.
Hello.
Greatest present for a dog at Christmas is a new collar and lead. You're ready to rock and roll and take your dog out into the park, and he or she's ready for the next year. When it comes to cats, there's nothing like a can of sardines, and for both dogs and cats, make sure you've got your tick repellent, because the ticks are going absolutely sick this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely true.
Kirsty, is it particular weather conditions that lead to an increase in the tick population, like if, you know, there's warm and dry, that sort of stuff?
Warm and windy and a bit of rain seems to bring them on. That was always the thing. And remember, paralysis ticks aren't all over Australia. They're down the sort of east coast, and there's other ticks that aren't paralysis ticks, but you're absolutely right. You need to have some tick protection on a regular basis with these animals. Warm, windy weather, bit of rain, that's when we usually see them. And they and the thing that we used to say, you know, tick season started September, finished about March. We get ticks all year round now because the weather's a little bit, you know, unpredictable, I guess.
Typically tropical, I think is a phrase.
Yeah. But I like the collar and lead idea. I think that's really good because they do wear out after a while.
The sardines for the cat.
Yeah. And I have to say, we, you know, just one thing that the animals won't care is the collar, the colour of the collar. But I had one Christmas where Santa bought the wrong colour collar for the dog, and everybody was very upset about that. So I don't think the dog cared, but everybody else did. So.
All right. Andrew, thanks for the tips. Great to hear from you. Diana, your dog's getting a lot of stomach troubles at the moment.
Yes, I have a little chihuahua, and she loves her food, of course. But every few days, she seems to get a tummy upset. I've spoken to my vet, and he told me just to keep her on chicken and vegetables, but it's still happening.
Okay, how long has it been happening?
Oh, I'd say a couple of years.
Wow, that's a long time. And is it vomiting or diarrhea, or what are you getting?
No, she just goes off her food, which is very unusual.
Right.
And then I have a product which I don't know if I can name.
Yep.
Ensil.
Right.
And that seems to work within a few hours, and she's back to normal.
Okay. 2 years is a long time for that to be happening, and I would really want to see that investigated. You know, you might need to have Lottie go and talk to your vet about it, but have some tests done on her feces, maybe an endoscope. But the other thing it could be is sometimes we get that sort of tummy upset with animals that are highly strung or stressed, and, you know, that doesn't mean that anything bad happens, but, you know, like there's people who are just more highly strung and stressed. And some of those animals, when we address their anxiety and stress, that tummy issue settle down quite nicely.
Right.
But I think you'd probably need to go and have a chat to your vet, because I would be worried about anything going on for 2 years. I think
okay.
we need to really investigate
yeah,
that.
Yeah, good move, Diana. Chris, you've got an issue at the moment with a younger and older dog.
Yeah, we've got an older male dog. He's coming up to about 10. We've got a younger female, and there just seems to be a little bit of a transition of power. We're moving house, protracted moving of house. I don't know whether that's brought it on. How do we best manage it? Because they've had a couple of sets, so there's nothing too serious, but there's definitely something.
How old's the younger one?
She would be 5.
Okay, all right. And they've been living together then for 5 years, would I be?
Yeah. She came to the pub, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Look, there's a number of reasons why dogs suddenly don't get on when they used to. Dogs don't live in a dominance hierarchy. There isn't a dominant dog, that sort of scenario. But we do find that as dogs get older, they tend to be a bit more irritable, I guess, just like perhaps most of us, when we get older, we get a bit crutchier about life. But I think you probably are, if you've got all these moves and stuff going on, their life's a little bit, disrupted from what it used to be as well. And again, that stress or anxiety response can make them much more irritable, whether it's the younger one or the older one. And it's very hard sometimes for people to say, oh, well, this one's always the instigator, because we miss those subtle signs when one of the dogs is actually staring at the other dog and the other one starts to stiffen and before you know it, they have a bit of a Barney. Probably the best way to manage that is I like people to keep a diary just to note when these happen, when they seem a bit more irritable, so you know if there's any particular triggers for that. And I think the other thing that can be really helpful sometimes if there is a lot of, movement and stuff going on is to get one of those pheromone collars for the dogs, because that can often make them feel less stressed and less anxious, because moving house is stressful for people, let alone the disruption it has for animals as well. And having routines for them is really important, that if they, not that everything has to happen, at 6 o'clock we do this, 7 o'clock we do that, but the routine is that one thing follows another, just like we get up in the morning and we do, there's certain routines that we do, rituals, put the kettle on, you have a cup of tea, you brush your teeth, that sort of scenario. So routines are helpful, the pheromone collars are really helpful, and keep a diary and see what those triggers might be, because if you can avoid them, that's the best thing.
All right, good on you, Chris. Thanks for that. Good luck. Anthony, you're thinking of getting a companion dog for an existing pet.
Yep, that's it. Yep. Hi, Tony, Kirsty.
Hello.
Hey, Anthony.
Yes, I've got an English staff. He's about 7 now.
Right.
And I was looking at possibly getting another dog, but I was wondering whether I get the same type of breed, whether I get a female or another male. Just wondering whether...
Yeah, that's a $1 million question. I guess there's a couple of things up front. Some dogs like being only children. And when people want another dog, what I usually say to them is, if you want the other dog, you get it for yourself. Don't do it for the other dog. Because if they don't like each other, and not all animals will like each other, that can be an issue. Generally, in the broad generalization, if you've got a male, get a female. That tends to cause less issues, but it doesn't guarantee it won't. And as to the breed of dog, it's whatever you like, because you're the one who's gonna make most of the decisions about this. And realistically, I guess that most dogs, when you introduce another dog in the household, are fine with that. But as with the previous caller, sometimes there's an upset, and that we need to manage that carefully. But recognise that not all dogs want a companion. And sometimes if you are going to get a companion, you want the dog to meet it at the same time on neutral territory to see what happens. Because if you have a bun fight on neutral territory, it ain't the dog you want to bring home.
Okay, no worries.
All right, Anthony, hope that helps a little bit. Scott, you've got lots of chooks and looking for a new home.
Yeah, mate, I started out with 8 and a rooster, and now I've got about 20. And listen, I can't go away for a weekend, It's like having sheep or something like that. It's just difficult.
You're in the Illawarra region, huh?
Further south than that.
Yeah.
East in down near Batemans Bay.
Okay.
And I need to find a good home for the... Look, I've got a beautiful rooster and beautiful hens and, his daughters and their offspring and... it's just wonderful. But
one big happy family, but needs a new home.
I've got 3.5 acres, man. They just wander. They just love it, But anyway, the other thing is I've got three Jack Russells all in bed with me at the moment. One 18, for God's sake. How old's that in dog years?
A lot.
And probably 3-year-old and a 7-year-old who are mad as cut snakes.
Well, that's the way we love it. Scott, anybody in the Illawarra area who would like the chooks or the rooster, they should give us a call.
A whole family. I've even got little babies at the moment. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is I'm worried about the tick stuff you put on your dogs. I put it on my old dog for ages. I don't tend to nowadays because Jack Russells are short-haired. I can find them and I pull them out.
Yep.
But he's come up with all these warty, cancerous growths and that sort of stuff, and I just wonder if anyone's done any research into the existence of this, whether it's just natural.
Well, most of the time it's just unfortunately a sign of ageing. We all tend to grow lumps and bumps as we get older.
Yeah.
And there I have seen no evidence or correlation of ticks causing that sort of scenario, the anti-tick stuff causing it. That's what I mean, the anti-tick stuff causing that at all. And I guess the other side of it is if you don't treat them, then, you know, death is very high on your list of possibilities. So there's that kind of scenario. But I have absolutely seen no evidence at all of the research. And we've been using these sort of anti-tick products for numerous years. And so I think you're probably looking at just a function of age. And good luck with your chooks.
Yeah, indeed. If you need some chooks and a rooster in the Illawarra area, just give us a quick call or we'll put you in touch with Scott. Mary Louise, you've got an adult dog that's really terrified of travelling in the car.
Yeah, hi Tony, hi Kirsty. We've had our lovely Jasper for about 6 years now. He lived in the pet shop for several months before we bought him.
Mm-hmm.
And he has always been a sort of an anxious kind of dog, but mostly he's got over that. He just hasn't got over his issues with travelling in the car.
Okay. What does he do when he's in the car? Is he one that drools or
shakes like a leaf?
Right.
Drools, restless, moving around all the time, can't decide if he wants to stand up, sit down.
There's two things that could be going on there. One is that dogs actually get car sick and it's actually a motion sickness. And there is a medication you can get from your vet that'll help with that motion sickness. So that's one possibility. The other one is that he just really doesn't like being in the car, the motion, the movement, and that's not uncommon. And usually they start to get worried as soon as you want to put them in the car. They'll often hop into the car, but as soon as the car starts moving, they get worried. But yet we have other ones that won't even go near the car. It's a major event. And again, those dogs, we benefit from anti-anxiety medication. And I usually get my clients to give that anti-anxiety medication about an hour before they're going on a trip, if you know what you're doing. You know, if you know you're going somewhere, it's not like an emergency, you've got to take them somewhere. And then what we find that anti-anxiety medication can make the animal feel a lot better. And again, it's important not to give them anything to eat beforehand because they tend to get, you know, that if you're nauseous, that'll guarantee you'll grow up at that point in time.
I always make sure no food for several hours
beforehand. Some animals travel better in the back of the car, and I'm talking about a station wagon type car, not the boot of the car here. Some animals do really well sitting on the seat in a seatbelt. Some animals do better in the footwell, and it must be determined with the centre of gravity of the car and the animal. And I've had some clients will have a dog that will ride well in one car but not in another. So you might have to experiment where you put the dog. I think dogs sometimes do really well in crates so that they actually feel nice and safe. And with the crate, you can actually cover it as well so they don't get that visual stimulation of, you know, as you're driving all the trees and everything going past. And I think that's why some do really well in the footwell because they can't see. And they do actually make a nice little I don't know what it's called, so I can't even give you the brand name. But you hook it over the seat, and it allows the dog to sit in the seat of the back of the car, and it keeps them nice and safe. So if you do break suddenly, they don't have an injury from that as well.
Yeah,
so,
I've seen those. Yeah, we haven't tried the footwell. I've tried pretty much everything else. I have a ute with a canopy on the back with cage, so it's open but enclosed. If you know what I mean.
I know. Yeah.
And I've tried a harness strapped in, because I thought maybe that, with anxious dogs, they put them in those tight vesty things.
Yep.
And I thought maybe that swaddling thing might help. But not really. I haven't tried the floor.
Well, try the floor because sometimes, as I said, they do better there. There's no doubt about that. But if, as I said, you can get some specifically for car sickness, there's a medication out now for dogs, and that's worth going to your vet and trying. And again, the other one is the anti-anxiety one, because if you can take their anxiety away before they get in the car, then they're usually fine with travelling.
All righty. Thanks so much for that. Trevor, caravanning with dogs. A bit of a concern about ticks.
Yeah, we are in Western Australia, out in the central wheat belt, and my wife and I, we've got a pug and a Tenterfield terrier. Now, next year we're sort of planning to move or to caravan over to the eastern states, and wondering where is worse for ticks. Is it more northern, like in Queensland perhaps, and New South Wales? Or
yeah, look, it runs really down the east coast. So Queensland, right down New South Wales coast, and now even into the Victorian coastland. It's and ticks are carried by bandicoots. So wherever you get the bandicoots, the chances are, because the bandicoots are immune to ticks, so they carry them around. So wherever you've got wildlife, whenever you've got bush areas, that's where you're going to find the ticks. But there is products that, that you put on the animal every 2 weeks. You can put these spot on things on them. There's collars. There's all sorts of different scenarios, and that will certainly help keep them safe. But nothing is 100%. So searching from, really from the tip of the nose to the tip of the tail is where you want to be going. But they're all down the east coast. And really, as I said before, we used to think it was September to March. But certainly in Sydney, I've seen them all year round. Not as much, but they're still there because the weather is different. So,
yeah. We're sort of planning on September, October. So
yeah, you're getting right into the tick season. But again, these products are pretty good in the sense that they're not, nothing is 100%, but they work really well. And keep it, like for my dog, when I take her out, I just don't let her stick her nose under any bushes and stuff. Like I keep her on the mown grass sort of area, so there's no big bushy stuff where the ticks could be hanging around.
Good luck, Trevor. An SMS from WA says, I have an issue with dog owners who walk their dogs on extremely hot days, walking on the road, no footpaths here while wearing shoes, and the poor dog has to suffer the very hot road surface. Helen from Cardinia in WA. So, it's an issue too. David, you're wondering how often should you wash working dogs?
Yeah, Kelpie's black ones that, I know they go into the dam or the creek if they get too hot, but it's just that one's got a bit of a sort of hair roughed up on the neck, sort of thought scratching. I removed the collar for an hour or so and put it back on. I'm just wondering if they do require washing.
Yeah, look, all dogs require washing at some stage, some more frequently than others. And it's to do with their skin, number one, because you do get dogs with dry skin or dandruff, and you get other dogs that get really oily skin. And if they have skin disease, they certainly need to be washed, but they need to be washed in dog shampoo, not human shampoos and soaps. So you need something specifically for that type, because human skin and dog skin is very different. And realistically, I guess, and you've got a working dog, but if you had a little white fluffy that slept in the bed with you, you probably don't want it sleeping in the bed with you unless it was, nice and clean. With working dogs, they still need, a wash, but it depends on what they've been rolling in. It's another thing if they've got a skin problem. But a good brush can do an amazing amount of good stuff. So, and not brush in the sense that you brush over the top, but a brush that actually gets right down to the skin surface area. And if you do that with the Kelpies or Border Collies, that'll help keep their skin nice and fresh and stuff as well. So it really depends. And the other thing is, if you've got a dog that really has irritable skin, I'd be looking for fleas, because that can really get them scratching and itching and give them all sorts of issues too. So as often as they need it, I guess, is the really simple answer to that.
Oh, thanks. And do you wash cats?
You can, and you certainly do. If they, you know, cats, I have cats who come in and they, you know, obviously they seem to really like it. The big thing is you don't just sort of plunge them in a bucket of water. The water temperature has to be nice and warm, not too hot, but definitely not tepid because their body temperature is different from ours. And you don't rain upon a cat. So if you're going to use a shower attachment, and same with the dog, you put the shower attachment when you run it along the surface. They don't like to be sort of, you know, rained upon like a shower. But, you know, with those handheld showers, right against the skin, really good, easy way to do it. But cats, if they're not used to it, interesting.
Yeah. Joe says, why do dogs roll in stinky stuff?
Because they're dogs and they can.
Because they're dogs and they can. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but Kirsty, thanks so much. I hope you have a great Christmas.
Same to
Wonderful
you.
New Year, and hopefully catch you early in
absolutely
2014. Can you believe I'm even saying that?
Well, have a great Christmas to all the listeners as well, and it's been great. We'll see you all in 2014.
Absolutely. Kirsty Sexel with us tonight.